The closest ally to the Tattaglia family was Don Emilio Barzini. He had some of the gambling in Brooklyn and some in Queens. He had some prostitution. He had strong arm. He completely controlled Staten Island. He had some of the sports betting in the Bronx and Westchester. He was in narcotics. He had close ties to Cleveland and the West Coast, and he was one of the few men shrewd enough to be interested in Las Vegas and Reno, the open cities of Nevada. He also had interests in Miami Beach and Cuba. After the Corleone family, his was perhaps the strongest in New York, and therefore in the country. His influence reached even to Sicily. His hand was in every unlawful pie. He was even rumored to have a toehold in Wall Street. He had supported the Tattaglia family with money and influence since the start of the war. It was his ambition to supplant Don Corleone as the most powerful and respected mafia leader in the country, and to take over part of the Corleone empire. He was a man much like Don Corleone, but more modern, more sophisticated, more businesslike. He could never be called an old Mustache Pete, and he had the confidence of the newer, younger, brasher leaders on their way up. He was a man of great personal force in a cold way, with none of Don Corleone's warmth, and he was perhaps at this moment the most respected man in the group. The last to arrive was Don Philip Tattaglia, the head of the Tattaglia family that had directly challenged the Corleone power by supporting Sollozzo and had so nearly succeeded. And yet, curiously enough, he was held in a slight contempt by the others. For one thing, it was known that he had allowed himself to be dominated by Sollozzo, had in fact been led by the nose by that fine Turkish hand. He was held responsible for all this commotion, this uproar that had so affected the conduct of everyday business by the New York families. Also, he was a 60-year-old dandy and woman-chaser, and he had ample opportunity to indulge his weakness. For the Tattaglia family dealt in women. Its main business was prostitution. It also controlled most of the nightclubs in the United States and could place any talent anywhere in the country. Philip Tattaglia was not above using strong arm to get control of promising singers and comics and muscling in on record firms. But prostitution was the main source of the family income. His personality was unpleasant to these men. He was a whiner, always complaining of the costs in his family business. Laundry bills, all those towels, ate up the profits, but he owned the laundry firm that did the work. The girls were lazy and unstable, running off, committing suicide. The pimps were treacherous and dishonest, and without a shred of loyalty. Good help was hard to find. Young lads of Sicilian blood turned up their noses at such work, considered it beneath their honor to traffic and abuse women. Those rascals who would slit a throat with a song on their lips and the cross of an Easter palm in the lapel of their jackets. So Philip Tattaglia would rant on to audiences unsympathetic and contemptuous. His biggest howl was reserved for authorities who had it in their power to issue and cancel liquor licenses for his nightclubs and cabarets. He swore he had made more millionaires than Wall Street with the money he had paid those thieving guardians of official seals. In a curious way, his almost victorious war against the Corleone family had not won him the respect it deserved. They knew his strength had come first from Sollozzo and then from the Barzini family. Also, the fact that with the advantage of surprise, he had not won complete victory was evidence against him. If he had been more efficient, all this trouble could have been avoided. The death of Don Corleone would have meant the end of the war. It was proper, since they had both lost sons in their war against each other, that Don Corleone and Philip Tattaglia should acknowledge each other's presence only with a formal nod. Don Corleone was the object of attention, the other men studying him to see what mark of weakness had been left on him by his wounds and defeats. The puzzling factor was why Don Corleone had sued for peace after the death of his favorite son. It was an acknowledgment of defeat and would almost surely lead to a lessening of his power. But they would soon know. There were greetings, there were drinks to be served, And almost another half hour went by before Don Corleone took his seat at the polished walnut table. Unobtrusively, Hagen sat in the chair slightly to the Don's left and behind him. This was the signal for the other Dons to make their way to the table. Their aides sat behind them, the consiglieres up close, so that they could offer any advice when needed. Don Corleone was the first to speak, and he spoke as if nothing had happened, as if he had not been grievously wounded and his eldest son slain, his empire in a shambles, his personal family scattered, Freddy in the west and under the protection of the Molinari family, and Michael secreted in the wastelands of Sicily. He spoke naturally in Sicilian dialect.
"I want to thank you all for coming," he said. "I consider it a service done to me personally, and I am in the debt of each and every one of you. And so, I will say at the beginning that I am here not to quarrel or convince, but only to reason, and as a reasonable man, do everything possible for us all to part friends here too. I give my word on that, and some of you who know me well know I do not give my word lightly. Ah, well, let's get down to business. We are all honorable men here. We don't have to give each other assurances as if we were lawyers."
He paused. None of the others spoke. Some were smoking cigars, others sipping their drinks. All of these men were good listeners, patient men. They had one other thing in common. They were those rarities, men who had refused to accept the rule of organized society, men who refused the dominion of other men. There was no force, no mortal man who could bend them to their will unless they wished it. They were men who guarded their free will with wiles and murder. Their wills could be subverted only by death, or the utmost reasonableness. Don Corleone sighed.
"How did things ever go so far?"
he asked rhetorically.
"Well, no matter. A lot of foolishness has come to pass. It was so unfortunate, so unnecessary. But let me tell what happened, as I see it."
He paused to see if someone would object to his telling his side of the story.
"Thank God, my health has been restored, and maybe I can help set this affair aright. Perhaps my son was too rash, too headstrong. I don't say no to that. Anyway, let me just say that Solozzo came to me with a business affair in which he asked me for my money and my influence. He said he had the interest of the Tattaglia family. The affair involved drugs, in which I have no interest. I'm a quiet man, and such endeavors are too lively for my taste. I explained this to Solozzo, with all respect for him and the Tattaglia family. I gave him my no with all courtesy. I told him his business would not interfere with mine, that I had no objection to his earning his living in this fashion. He took it ill and brought misfortune down on all our heads. Well, that's life. Everyone here could tell his own tale of sorrow. That's not to my purpose."
Don Corleone paused and motioned to Hagen for a cold drink, which Hagen swiftly furnished him. Don Corleone wet his mouth.
"I'm willing to make the peace," he said. "Tattaglia has lost a son. I have lost a son. We are quits. What would the world come to if people kept carrying grudges against all reason? That has been the cross of Sicily, where men are so busy with vendettas they have no time to earn bread for their families. It's foolishness. So, I say now, let things be as they were before. I have not taken any steps to learn who betrayed and killed my son. Given peace, I will not do so. I have a son who cannot come home, and I must receive assurances that when I arrange matters so that he can return safely, that there will be no interference, no danger from the authorities. Once that's settled, maybe we can talk about other matters that interest us and do ourselves, all of us, a profitable service today.
Corleone gestured expressively, submissively with his hands.
That is all I want.
It was very well done. It was the Don Corleone of old, reasonable, pliant, soft-spoken. But every man there had noted that he had claimed good health, which meant he was a man not to be held cheaply despite the misfortunes of the Corleone family. It was noted that he had said the discussion of other business was useless until the peace he asked for was given. It was noted that he had asked for the old status quo, that he would lose nothing despite his having got the worst of it over the past year. However, it was Emilio Barzini who answered Don Corleone, not Tattaglia. He was curt and to the point without being rude or insulting.
That is all true enough, Barzini said. But there's a little more. Don Corleone is too modest. The fact is that Solozzo and the Tattaglias could not go into their new business without the assistance of Don Corleone. In fact, his disapproval injured them. That's not his fault, of course. The fact remains that judges and politicians who would accept favors from Don Corleone, even on drugs, would not allow themselves to be influenced by anybody else when it came to narcotics. Solozzo couldn't operate if he didn't have some insurance of his people being treated gently. We all know that. We would all be poor men otherwise. And now that they have increased the penalties, the judges and the prosecuting attorneys drive a hard bargain when one of our people gets in trouble with narcotics. Even a Sicilian sentenced to 20 years might break the omerta and talk his brains out. That can't happen. Don Corleone controls all that apparatus. His refusal to let us use it is not the act of a friend. He takes the bread out of the mouths of our families. Times have changed. It's not like the old days where everyone can go his own way. If Corleone had all the judges in New York, then he must share them or let us others use them. Certainly he can present a bill for such services. We're not communists, after all. But he has to let us draw water from the well. It's that simple. When Barzini had finished talking, there was a silence. The lines were now drawn. There could be no return to the old status quo. What was more important was that Barzini, by speaking out, was saying that if peace was not made, he would openly join the Tattaglias in their war against the Corleones. And he had scored a telling point. Their lives and their fortunes depended upon their doing each other services. The denial of a favor asked by a friend was an act of aggression. Favors were not asked lightly, and so could not be lightly refused. Don Corleone finally spoke to answer. My friends, he said, I didn't refuse out of spite. You all know me. When have I ever refused an accommodation? That's simply not in my nature. But I had to refuse this time. Why? Because I think this drug business will destroy us in the years to come. There is too much strong feeling about such traffic in this country. It's not like whiskey or gambling or even women, which most people want and are forbidden them by the pezzonovanti of the church and the government. But drugs are dangerous for everyone connected with them. It could jeopardize all other business. And let me say, I'm flattered by the belief that I am so powerful with the judges and law officials. I wish it were true. I do have some influence, but many of the people who respect my counsel might lose this respect if drugs become involved in our relationship. They are afraid to be involved in such business, and they have strong feelings about it. Even policemen who help us in gambling and other things would refuse to help us in drugs. So, to ask me to perform a service in these matters is to ask me to do a disservice to myself. But I'm willing to do even that if all of you think it proper in order to adjust other matters.
When Don Corleone had finished speaking, the room became much more relaxed, with more whisperings and crosstalk. He had conceded the important point. He would offer his protection to any organized business venture in drugs. He was, in effect, agreeing almost entirely to Sollozzo's original proposal if that proposal was endorsed by the national group gathered here. It was understood that he would never participate in the operational phase, nor would he invest his money. He would merely use his protective influence with the legal apparatus. But this was a formidable concession. The Don of Los Angeles, Frank Falcone, spoke to answer.
There's no way of stopping our people from going into that business. They go in on their own and they get in trouble. There's too much money in it to resist. So it's more dangerous if we don't go in. At least if we control it, we can cover it better, organize it better, make sure it causes less trouble. Being in it is not so bad. There has to be control, there has to be protection, there has to be organization. We can't have everybody running around doing just what they please like a bunch of anarchists.
The Don of Detroit, more friendly to Corleone than any of the others, also now spoke against his friend's position in the interest of reasonableness.
I don't believe in drugs, he said. For years I paid my people extra so they wouldn't do that kind of business. But it didn't matter, didn't help. Somebody comes to them and says, I have powders. If you put up the $3,000-$4,000 investment, we can make $50,000 distributing. Who can resist such a profit? And they are so busy with their little side business, they neglect the work I pay them to do. There's more money in drugs. It's getting bigger all the time. There's no way to stop it, so we have to control the business and keep it respectable. I don't want any of it near schools. I don't want any of it sold to children. That is an infamita. In my city, I would try to keep the traffic in the dark people, the colored. They are the best customers, the least troublesome, and they are animals anyway. They have no respect for their wives or their families or for themselves. Let them lose their souls with drugs. But something has to be done. We just can't let people do as they please and make trouble for everyone.
This speech of the Detroit Don was received with loud murmurs of approval. He had hit the nail on the head. You couldn't even pay people to stay out of the drug traffic. As for his remarks about children, that was his well-known sensibility, his tender-heartedness speaking. After all, who would sell drugs to children? Where would children get the money? As for his remarks about the coloreds, that was not even heard. The Negroes were considered of absolutely no account, of no force whatsoever. That they had allowed society to grind them into the dust proved them of no account, and his mentioning them in any way proved that the Don of Detroit had a mind that always wavered toward irrelevancies. All the Dons spoke. All of them deplored the traffic in drugs as a bad thing that would cause trouble, but agreed there was no way to control it. There was simply too much money to be made in the business. Therefore, it followed that there would be men who would dare anything to dabble in it. That was human nature. It was finally agreed. Drug traffic would be permitted, and Don Corleone must give it some legal protection in the East. It was understood that the Barzini and Tattaglia families would do most of the large-scale operations. With this out of the way, the conference was able to move on to other matters of a wider interest. There were many complex problems to be solved. It was agreed that Las Vegas and Miami were to be open cities where any of the families could operate. They all recognized that these were the cities of the future. It was also agreed that no violence would be permitted in these cities, and that petty criminals of all types were to be discouraged. It was agreed that in momentous affairs, in executions that were necessary but might cause too much of a public outcry, the execution must be approved by this council. It was agreed that button men and other soldiers were to be restrained from violent crimes and acts of vengeance against each other on personal matters. It was agreed that families would do each other services when requested, such as providing executioners,
technical assistance in pursuing certain courses of action, such as bribing jurors, which in some instances could be vital. These discussions, informal, colloquial, and on a high level, took time and were broken by lunch and drinks from the buffet bar. Finally, Don Barzini sought to bring the meeting to an end.
"That's the whole matter, then," he said. "We have the peace, and let me pay my respects to Don Corleone, whom we all have known over the years as a man of his word. If there are any more differences, we can meet again. We need not become foolish again. On my part, the road is new and fresh. I'm glad this is all settled."
Only Philip Tattaglia was a little worried still. The murder of Santino Corleone made him the most vulnerable person in this group if war broke out again. He spoke at length for the first time.
"I've agreed to everything here. I'm willing to forget my own misfortune. But I would like to hear some strict assurances from Corleone. Will he attempt any individual vengeance? When time goes by and his position perhaps becomes stronger, will he forget that we have sworn our friendship? How am I to know that in 3 or 4 years he won't feel that he's been ill-served, forced against his will to this agreement and so free to break it? Will we have to guard against each other all the time, or can we truly go in peace with peace of mind? Would Corleone give us all his assurances, as I now give mine?"